And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With it till 3 on a throwback Thursday with plenty to do over the next few hours. Coming up, the message that the Carolina Panthers sent yesterday. Plus, the concerns for Clemson. Should we have seen it coming? Also, the Dodgers escaped last night and continue on in Major League Baseball's postseason. An interesting trend to keep an eye on this Sunday in the NFL. And we'll preview Braves Brewers with Corey McCartney coming up an hour from now. I'll let you know the keys to that series for the Braves. Lee Sterling will join us 2 hours from now for his picks of this football weekend. And coming up around 1:30, Paul Charchian will be with us, as always, on Thursdays to help you get set for Week 5 of the NFL season. Got our wrestling wrap-up, and on a throwback Thursday, it is the anniversary of the most dominant performance probably in all of sports, all time. Get to that later on. With it till 3 on this Thursday, you can join the conversation throughout the afternoon. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Thursday, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
What's going on? Talk about a throwback Thursday. This is kind of a throwback for us, you know, because our late morning show is not on today, so it was almost like earlier this year.
Yeah, that's true. No Scott Hamilton show today. Yeah, I came in, and the lights were off here in the studio, but that was no different, because usually Scott does his show in the dark anyways. So I just assumed he was here. All right, the lights were off. I walked in. It felt normal. Let me start with this. You ever work for a company that's struggling, and there are some red flags along the way, right? If you work for a company that ends up going out of business, that ends up going under, you could probably see the writing on the wall beforehand. They don't replace people. People leave for other jobs. They don't hire anybody. And you're thinking, well, we're never going to fill that position. Maybe there are no more happy hours, or they're a little tight, right, with the budget in terms of lunches. You go out for a lunch with a client, you know, maybe you can't charge it to the company anymore. Coffee in the break room, maybe no longer there's no more coffee in the break room. You're thinking, what's going on around here? All these little tiny things are disappearing. Or maybe it's with a car you know you're getting rid of, or the lease is coming up, whatever it may be, and there's something that probably should be done to the car, but you figure, I'm going to get rid of it in a couple of months anyways. Why invest more money on this piece of junk that I'm just going to get rid of in a few months? It's not worth it. Or a house you're moving out of, or some place that you live. And you look at the house and you say, like, yeah, we could repair that, but we're getting out of here in a few months anyways. It's not worth the money. Let's keep it together, throw, you know, some patchwork there, and we'll get through the next couple of months, move out of here, it won't be our problem. J.C. Horn gets injured for the Carolina Panthers, and they go out and trade for C.J. Henderson 1 week, and then Stephon Gilmore the next week. Two former top 10 picks. And you don't make these moves if you don't buy into the team, and if you don't buy into Sam Darnold as your quarterback. Gilmore can't return until week 7 at the earliest. He's on the PUP list. He's a free agent at the end of the year. Scott Fitterer, Panthers GM, talking yesterday, said, yeah, we'll kind of see where things go. We'll have Gilmore here for this season. Depending on how he plays, we'll see about the future. It could be an 11-game cameo for for Gilmore with the Carolina Panthers. But they still made the move. And it's not one you make if you don't believe in your team. Or more specifically, if you don't believe in Sam Darnold. It's like the company going out of business and not replacing somebody. They figure, it's not worth it. Right? We're struggling. We don't have it in the budget. We only have a few months left. Right? A few decision makers may know that. Like, we're kind of on our way under. Somebody leaves the company and they think like, okay, well, that's it. We can't replace him. We're not going to. We're just going to try to patch it together in the meantime. J.C. Horn gets injured. The Panthers didn't look around and say like, okay, well, that's it. That's unfortunate. We lost our star cornerback. We'll try to figure it out in the meantime. No, they went out and they got somebody. They got two people, C.J. Henderson and then Stephon Gilmore. Took the chance, gave up a draft pick, spent $6 million, even if it's just for 11 games of Gilmore. Right? That's the sign that your company may be doing pretty well if you bring in somebody for just temporary purposes. Somebody leaves and you say, okay, well, let's hire him. You're only going to be here for a little while, all right? Whatever the reason may be. Maybe it's a consultant. They're just stopping by. But if the company can afford to pay somebody to just come in for a couple of weeks and both sides know, like, yeah, this is just temporary. We'll find a more permanent solution. That could be, you feel kind of good about that as a fellow employee. Like, our company, right, we're doing pretty well. They care. They're going to bring in somebody temporarily until they permanently fill the job. They're able to pay somebody else whatever it costs to get them in here just for a few weeks and then go pay somebody else to come in and do the job. But if the boss says, yeah, you know what? We're not looking to fill this position anymore. And it's an important position. That's probably not a good sign. If the Panthers said, yeah, you know what? We lost J.C. Horn. That's just how the season goes. Tough break. Guys get injured. Our star got injured. All right, well, we got off to a good start. We'll see how it goes from here. No, they went out aggressively and found a couple of replacements. Panthers are off to a 3-1 start. They have an easy schedule. In fact, they're favored in their next five games. Sam Darnold's playing well. They figure, hey, why not? Let's go for it. It's hard to win in the NFL. Right? You might as well take a chance while you have an opportunity, and I like it. Take that shot. Be aggressive. We talk about it all the time on the show, that's what it takes to win these days in sports. The teams that are most aggressive are the ones that typically have the most success. Now, I don't know how much these two will truly bring to the team this year or at any point, but they are great low-risk, high-reward moves. You bring in C.J. Henderson, who's already been kind of labeled a bust, but it was just a year ago that he was drafted in the top 10 of the NFL draft. Maybe it was the coaching. Maybe it was a bad fit in Jacksonville. Maybe he just needs a change of scenery. Whatever it may be, you didn't give up a ton for him. You bring him in. It was just a year ago, right? About 18 months ago, not even, that everybody thought he was one of the best players in the draft. Why not take a flyer on him? Why not take a chance? He's still incredibly young, right? Still somewhat raw, can be taught. Maybe you like him as a fit in your program. You like your coaches once they get their hands on him. And Stephon Gilmore, similar in that you only gave up a six-round draft pick. Sure, you're probably only getting for him 11. You're probably only going to get him for 11 games. He's coming off the worst season of his career, now an injury as well. He's still rehabbing. He's not available for a couple of more weeks. He's now 31 years old. That's a tough age for a cornerback. Deion Sanders did not make a Pro Bowl after he turned 31. Champ Bailey started to have some injuries when he became 30. Rod Woodson got injured the season he turned 30 as well, was never the same afterwards and had to become a safety. Richard Sherman hasn't been the same since turning 30. He, too, has had injury issues. Hasn't played a full season since. Stephon Gilmore had his worst season when he turned 30 last year. Now some injuries. He's 31 this year. I don't know what he brings to the table. I don't know if Henderson can be turned around. I'm not sure how much you get from these two. But you didn't have to give up too much. And most importantly, what it shows is that the Panthers believe in this team. And most importantly, they believe in the new quarterback. Because you can't get anything done without the quarterback. You wouldn't make these moves, even if you were 3-1, but you looked at your team and you saw, it's kind of fraudulent, right? We really don't have the quarterback. He can't make the plays. You wouldn't go out and make these moves. I think back to the Minnesota Vikings when Teddy Bridgewater got injured. They were aggressive and acquired Sam Bradford the week of the season. Because they looked at their team and said, we got the guys to compete here. We can't just sit back and let a year go by and say, too bad, Teddy got hurt. All right, well, we'll regroup for next year. No, there's only so many opportunities you have to try to win something in the NFL. They went out, found a quarterback. Right, the Packers, when they weren't believing as much in Aaron Rodgers, went out and drafted Jordan Love. The Giants, when they saw the writing on the wall with Eli Manning and went out and drafted Daniel Jones. The teams will let you know what they think based off of their decisions. And the Panthers are letting you know by making these moves, you know what? We got a pretty good team here. We got the right quarterback. J.C. Horn got injured. Okay, let's go find somebody to fill that spot and try to keep on rolling. You know, when Tom Brady became a free agent last year and signed with the Buccaneers, all reports have been only about four teams were interested. And it tells you what those teams thought about themselves. The ones that were willing to go in on Brady, like the Buccaneers, Tampa Bay was 7-9, almost made the playoffs with Jameis Winston. He threw 35 interceptions. They looked at the roster, as we saw last year when the season played out. They looked at the roster and said, hey, you know what? We got a pretty good team here. If we could just bring in a quarterback who will take care of the football, be a little bit better than Jameis Winston, we could do something special. The Buccaneers were all in on Tom Brady. There were a lot of teams that weren't, in part for some of them, because they probably look at their roster and say, yeah, of course, we would love to have Brady, greatest quarterback of all time, but we're not really in a spot to go win right now. So is it worth it to bring him in? Does that change our plans? We're kind of rebuilding here. We don't really have the team to go win. The Panthers, J.C. Horn goes down with an injury. They could look at their team and say, well, you know what? Got off to a good start. Haven't really beaten a ton of teams. All right, the record may be a little hollow. Ah, too bad Horn got hurt. All right, let's try to replace him in the meantime and try to get better next year. No, they went out, and they made some moves the past 2 weeks. They've been the most aggressive team in the league so far since the start of the season. They believe in that team. But more importantly, they believe in Sam Darnold. Because, again, if you don't have that quarterback, it doesn't matter. You could be 3-1. You could go out and bring in a good cornerback. If you look at your team, and most importantly, the quarterback position, and say, like, yeah, you know what? He's not the guy. He can't get it done. Then you wouldn't even bother in trying to make these moves because you'd have a ceiling. You could only go so far with a certain quarterback. A month into the season, the Panthers look at their team. They like what they see, and they like what they've gotten out of the quarterback. And when Horn goes down, they're not going to let this opportunity slip away. Just like if you're at a company, you could tell if a company's doing well or struggling based off of their decisions. Somebody leaves and they don't want to replace them, probably not a good sign. Somebody leaves and they bring in somebody, even if it's just temporary, but they want to bring them in because they don't want that void in the company. Right? And they're willing to spend some money, even overspend, just to bring somebody in, right? Just to get them in here and fill a void while they can find someone permanently. It's nice to see the company invest those resources. The Panthers certainly investing resources, spending money, using draft picks, and bringing these guys in to try to make something still happen this year. Let me shift to this. I was reading about this in the New York Times the other day. It's called shrinkflation, something that's going on now with the pandemic more so than before. Shrinkflation, what it is when companies minimize their products but charge the same price, but they slowly do it so that you don't even notice. And then over time, if you compare one thing to the other, then that's when you kind of notice. Or if they go too far, right? Like, for example, you ever get a bag of chips and you open up the bag of chips and you realize only half the bag is full. Right? The rest of it is this air. You pick up a bag of chips off the counter at the grocery store, off the shelf, and it's this big puffy bag. And, oh, yeah, you get some sour cream chips. Then you come home, you pop it open, and you realize half the bag is just empty space. But they charge you the same price. And over the years, the amount of chips in that bag keep getting smaller and smaller, but they charge you the same price. Sometimes they even increase the price. And if you had a bag, you're just going to have to go off of memory because I hope nobody keeps a bag of chips that long, but if you had a bag from years ago and you compared it to the bag of chips you buy at the store today and you open each of them up at the same time, you'll see there are more chips in the old bag. It's called shrinkflation. Companies do it all the time. And you won't notice unless you actually have those items to compare. Or if you go get like a can of peanut butter or a jar of peanut butter, whatever phrase you want to use for peanut butter, right? And it's slowly, they slowly minimize. You can't even notice it when you grab it off the shelf. It's like a centimeter smaller or a half inch smaller. The container contains a half inch less of peanut butter. You don't notice. It's not like they cut it in half. But if you had the old peanut butter jar and you put it on the counter and you bring the new one home and you put it next to the old peanut butter, you say, wait a minute. This is a little bit smaller than the old one, and they just charge me the same price. Shrinkflation. And when times get tough, that's what companies do to squeeze a little more out of you, to help themselves out. My point being, after a while, it finally catches up to you. Finally notice. But in the meantime, it's so minor, it's so small, that you don't notice it until it really maybe gets out of control. They go too far, or over a long period of time, it stands out, and you realize, like, whoa, we're getting screwed here. The bag of chips are a lot smaller than they used to be. I bring all this up because the Clemson Tigers, we know, are struggling this year. And maybe there was a little shrinkflation. Maybe there were a few signs, a little writing on the wall leading up to this season the last couple of years. Whether it was the blowouts in the playoff, right? I mean, go back to when they blew out Alabama in the national championship. And we were thinking, okay, Clemson is now the team to beat. They just leapfrogged Alabama. But then from that point on, they lost some big games against big teams, most notably in the playoff the last couple of years. Or even last year, with DJ at the starting quarterback position, to Notre Dame. A game that Clemson, even on the road and Saturday night with a backup quarterback, as good as DJ played that night and as good as he is as a recruit, probably shouldn't lose. And then you get to this season, and we know what has happened so far. They lose to Georgia week one. They have struggled. You know, Boston College plays them tough. NC State beats them for the first time. You know, NC State beats an unranked team for the first, or I should say beats a ranked team for the first time in about a decade. It's like Aaron Boone said the other day about, you know, oh, the rest of the league closed the gap on us. Except that happened 20 years ago for the Yankees. I don't want to overreact, but maybe it is happening for Clemson. You know, a year ago, they had the most five-star recruits on the roster. Now you look at the team, Alabama has more than three times as many five-stars on the roster. If you look at the ACC, UNC and Miami have as many five-stars on the roster as Clemson. And maybe we were slowly creeping this way where there are little signs here and there. They get blown out by LSU, blown out by Ohio State, lose to Notre Dame. You could see these other teams creating that gap once again with Clemson. To the point now when you have to replace this big-time talent, when you lose a Trevor Lawrence and a Travis Etienne, DJ has to step in, and maybe it's an inexperienced offensive line. Right now the gap is even closed when you go up against a Boston College with a backup quarterback at your place, or you have to go play NC State on the road. A little shrinkflation, right, where you don't notice it while it's going on, but then you look back and say, like, oh, you know what, there were some signs here. Over time, you see the difference, that it's not quite the same as it once was. Seems to be the case with Clemson. Now, EJ Manuel, who knows a thing or two about playing quarterback in the ACC and for a big brand, he was on a podcast this week talking about DJ and the struggles. He was on the Gramlich and Macklin podcast. This is what EJ Manuel said about DJ's struggles and what his message would be for the Clemson quarterback.
My biggest advice, Kelly, would be to relax. I tell DJ to breathe, man. Like, for one, because he has the weight of the world on his shoulders. You know, you're the quarterback taking over for a true legend of Trevor Lawrence. A team that has the expectation to carry the torch for the ACC. You know, let's be honest, it was kind of Clemson and everybody else for a long time. And here's the funny thing, too, and I've heard Dabo say this multiple times. If they go out and make one or two plays in that Georgia game and they beat Georgia, the narrative's completely different. That's just true. Whether DJ played well or not, if they won that game, the narrative is still different. And so I feel like for him, just get back in the saddle. You know, and what that means is just get back up on the horse. You might be knocked down a little bit, but you got a lot of football left to play.
EJ Manuel talking about DJ, his struggles, and Clemson. The good news for Clemson, they have this bye week to try to sort things out, and then Syracuse waiting for them, which could be a get-right game. Although, I will say, Syracuse has become a trendy pick to upset Wake Forest this week and really throw a wrench into the final plans of the ACC. Coming up, the Dodgers were able to escape last night. Maybe I had this whole one-game wildcard thing wrong. I don't know. And on a throwback Thursday, last night, I had deja vu all over again, and I'll explain why. It's the More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
It's Throwback Thursday.
What's today?
It's Thursday.
Really? Feels like Tuesday.
Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Hi, everybody. I'm Archie Bell of the Drills of Houston, Texas. We don't only sing, but we dance just as good as we want. In Houston, we just started a new dance called the Tighten Up. This is the music we tighten up with. First, tighten up on the drum. Come on now, drummer. I want you to tighten it up for me now. Oh, yeah.
Coming up,
tighten up on that bass now.
The Dodgers survived the one-game wild card last night.
Yeah.
It was a great night for Rob Manfred, and for me, it was deja vu all over again. I'll get to that coming up on a Throwback Thursday here on the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. So we got the Charleston, we got the Carolina Shag, and you got the Titan up as well. I remember we played this going back now over a year ago. And Mark was on the board at the time. And we even looked, we went through the music video to learn how to do the tighten up. It was pretty good, too. You could do the Charleston, the Carolina Shag, or even the Archie Bell tighten-up dance as well on a Throwback Thursday. The Dodgers survived last night, and what a game it was. I think. I don't know. I couldn't see the end of it. I'll tell you why in a moment. But the Dodgers get the big win last night in advance, and it was really the perfect night for Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball. Yesterday I was talking on the show about how, you know, the worst thing for Major League Baseball could turn out to be the best thing. That if they lose the Yankees and the Dodgers on back-to-back nights, maybe that would be some sort of wake-up call to Manfred and Major League Baseball that they have to change this format. Because it usually takes changes, or I should say it usually takes big brands, big names, powerful people to prompt change. Replay was added to Major League Baseball because of a game involving the Yankees and the Mets, two New York teams on national TV. Right, they changed the quarterback rules after Tom Brady got injured. Nobody else. They changed the overtime rules in the NFL after Brett Favre was left on the sideline. So I thought maybe this would be it. Yankees are knocked out. Dodgers are knocked out. Okay, Major League Baseball will change something. I do think we get expanded playoffs next year, though, much like last season, and we remove these one-game playoffs, but we'll see. But for Major League Baseball, great night because you have the great game, intriguing, down to the last pitch, and then in the end, you also get the Dodgers to advance. And now for the first time in Major League Baseball history, we have the Dodgers and Giants playing one another in the playoffs. It's never happened before. You talk about these rivalries. The Red Sox, the Yankees have played one another in the playoffs countless times. Never have seen the Dodgers-Giants. And this will also be the playoff series with the most featured wins. Two teams with the best combined records going up against one another. Unfortunately, it's in the NLDS and not the NLCS for these two. Five-game series. We'll see what happens. Now, as I was talking yesterday on the show, I am concerned for the teams that rely heavily on homers. Nobody relies more on home runs than the Giants. And I saw a stat tweeted out by Hembo, who you can hear on the Greeny Show, or at least at times on the Greeny Show, such as today, before us. Works for ESPN. He tweeted out a stat about the Giants, their record when they homer and when they don't homer. And when they don't hit a home run, they're something like 9-28. The Giants are very home run reliant. And that's not a good strategy come playoff time. But last night, the Dodgers fortunate to even get to that series against the Giants because the Cardinals had countless missed opportunities. They went 0-for-11 with runners in scoring position, leaving 11 men on base. They had a chance in the top of the ninth, got the go-ahead run into scoring position, couldn't drive him in. If you are a Cardinals fan, my goodness, last night must have been so frustrating. You're ripping your hair out. 0-for-11, they just get one big hit. Get one hit somewhere along the way. They couldn't. They scored their only run in the first inning, were shut out the rest of the way. And when the Cardinals played their best baseball in September, one of the things was that they hit over 300 with runners in scoring position. They were so good in those spots. I guess last night was the regression to the mean. Or maybe just facing top pitching in a playoff game, maybe more pressure, whatever the moment, you know, the moment may have been too big, whatever it was, the Cardinals, who were so clutch throughout September as they won 17 straight, could not come up with a big hit last night. All they needed was one. Also, some questionable managerial moves. Now, I like Mike Shildt. You have to be careful when you say that name on the radio. I think he's a good manager. I think he's done a good job in St. Louis. But last night, two big decisions that stood out that I didn't quite get, like allowing Adam Wainwright to bat in the fifth inning and then pulling him an out later. He gets one out. In the bottom of the sixth, they let him bat in the top of the sixth, then it was, right? And they pulled him after one more out. I don't get that. Or even in the ninth inning, when they went to Reyes, and it's easy to say now, you know, hindsight being 2020, they bring in Reyes out of the bullpen, and the first batter he faces, he gives up the walk-off homer. But they had better options in that bullpen. I don't know why you go to Reyes, who has been struggling of late anyways. And that, of course, was the biggest move in the ninth inning that led to their downfall. So the Dodgers win, they advance, they go on to take on the Giants, and here was Max Scherzer post-game, bare-chested. He was topless. He had his shirt off. He's on TBS. They're on national TV after the game, and Scherzer obviously having a good time enjoying it last night.
Yeah, K-Long told me a couple days ago, you got to get rid of this echo. I can't talk. I'm drunk. Whatever.
As you hear there, Scherzer originally was slurring his words. Then I guess there was an echo in the headset. That doesn't help. Then he admits to being drunk. He was having fun. Now, that interview wasn't too long after the game, so either he was pounding beers or the champagne that was being sprayed around, or Scherzer. I mean, maybe it's the season. Maybe he hasn't drank anything in a while. I don't know. But he was already drunk on TV afterwards, enjoying it. And it was a cool moment to see the Nationals players there supporting their former teammates, Trey Turner and Max Scherzer. When I say Nationals players, really it was just Juan Soto and the hitting coach, Kevin Long, and they were sitting behind home plate, and Scherzer and Turner went over after the game and were high-fiving them. That was a pretty cool moment to see that, you know, those relationships. But the Dodgers were able to survive in advance, and Major League Baseball had to sweat one out last night, but they get to keep their precious Dodgers here moving forward. Now, for me, on a throwback Thursday, to borrow a phrase from a former baseball player, it was deja vu all over again. Last night, I'm sitting there watching the game, and as soon as they get the final out in the bottom of the seventh, I don't remember who it was, one of the Dodgers hitters struck out to end the seventh inning. They go to commercial break. I hear a pop outside, and it was almost like it happened in slow motion. I'm sure this is just my memory, and this is not what really happened, but I heard a pop outside, and I knew what it was right away. And I said audibly, oh, no, and the power then went out. I lost power last night. My whole neighborhood lost power. I don't know what it was. A transformer blew up, went down. I have no idea. Lost power at the end of the seventh inning of that game last night. And that game was going on for a while because that was at, like, almost 11:30, and we were still just seven innings in. So I thought, oh, great, there goes the power. And at first I thought, hopefully it's just like a brownout. It's going to come right back on. But I heard that popping noise. I knew something was wrong, and it wasn't coming back on. And I did a poor job. I usually charge my phone when I go to bed. So my phone was only at about 25% to begin with. So I was watching here or there. I'd pop in on my phone to watch the game on my phone, but I couldn't sit there and watch the final two innings. My phone was going to die, and who knows how long the power's going to be out for. I needed, you know, be able to set my alarm to get up this morning in time. So I thought, oh, I can't let my phone die. So I'm popping in and out. I'm watching highlights. I'm checking the box score every once in a while. And I just had to sit there in the dark. Now, why this is deja vu all over again is because I take you back. The year was 2000-something. And it was an NFL playoff game. Steelers-Jaguars were playing. And I had buddies over, and we were watching the game in the basement of my parents' house. And we were watching the game. And Steelers-Jags, it was, if I remember correctly, it was tied in the fourth quarter. Like, it was a dramatic game coming down the home stretch. And we're watching it in the fourth quarter, same thing happens. You hear a loud noise, boom, power goes out. TV shuts off, lights cut out, pitch black, right? It's a Saturday night. It was in the middle of the winter. Everything goes dark, and we think, oh, shoot. And again, you first think, you hope, it's just a brownout. Like, okay, hopefully it just comes right back on. We have to see the end of this game. Of course, it didn't come back on. And we saw, we were in the basement, and out of the window, we could see a bright, like, orange light into the backyard of the house. And we're thinking, what is going on here? It was kind of scary at first. Power goes out. You see this bright orange light streaming into the backyard of the house. We were all, and I was in the basement with my buddies, and we're thinking, like, what's going on? Like, are we under attack? What's happening here? So we went out the back door of the basement, went to the front of the house to see what is going on. We get to the front yard. There is a car across the street that is halfway up my neighbor's yard. And he drove, this guy drove right through the pole that held up the power lines. It was still laying on top of the car. And here's this dude. He was in like a mink coat. And he's shuffling Bud Lights down the sewer. And his door was wide open. The hazards were on. That's like what the light was that was flashing in the backyard. Hazards was on. Door was open. Paul in the car. Music blaring. You could hear it as soon as we got out of the house thinking, like, what is going on up here? And this dude, more than half in the bag, is trying to get rid of all the evidence. He's dumping beer cans down the sewer. And he's, like, yelling at us, slurring his words to stay away. Long story short, you could piece it together by now. This kid, who wasn't much older than us at the time, I don't know if he was even 21, came flying around the corner because we lived kind of on a bend growing up. He came flying around the corner, lost control of the car. Fortunately for us, unfortunately for them, he didn't come into our yard. He went in the other direction, into the neighbor across the street's yard, went right through the pole that held the power lines. It was an old neighborhood. The power lines weren't underground. Wiped that out, went halfway up the yard, dug up their yard, and then he tries to take off. Right? Of course, the cops come. Somebody called the cops. people, the neighbors came out to see what happened. We lost power. There was a loud bang. Everyone's out in the street, and they all know who it was. He took off and tried to run. Went running up the street, and we lost power. And at the time, because this was, you know, before smart, we couldn't watch it on our iPhones. We couldn't even get the box score on our iPhones. There were no iPhones at the time. And I remember one of my friends called his father to have to get a ride. I guess we weren't 16 at the time. That's how young we were. Or we at least didn't. They didn't have cars. Called the father and getting like the play-by-play over the phone. And it must have been the Steelers that won on a last-second field goal. And we missed the whole thing. And it was missing the last night. Dodgers win on a walk-off homer. I pretty much missed the whole thing. I saw the highlights afterwards, but I was left literally in the dark. Lost power last night. Joe, when is the last time that you have lost power? Can you recall? Because for me, I have to be honest, this is the first time in years, first time since I've moved here to South Carolina that I ever had to deal with no power. I was unprepared. I had no candles, no flashlights, nothing to occupy my time. My phone wasn't charged. Eventually, I just sat there. I said, all right, I might as well just go to bed. I have nothing else to do. When's the last time you lost power?
Last time we lost power at home, while we were home, probably several months ago, and it wasn't for very long.
Yeah. Well, this was. Now, they came out pretty quick. They were working on it all night. I could hear them. I was waking up in the middle of the night hearing them. They sound like they had a chainsaw out there. Anyways, they got it up and running this morning at about 6:30 this morning. So all told, it was about 7 hours. Not so bad when it's at night like that. You just go to bed. Right, but what do you do when you lose power? There's certain things we take for granted. Nowadays, it's like your phone. Right, when you don't have your phone, you feel helpless. Or like when the internet's down, kind of like the other day when Facebook and Instagram was down and people were freaking out, like, what do? I can't go on Instagram at work. You know, and you feel helpless. But when you lose power, that's really, I mean, what do? You can't do anything. I didn't have any flashlights or candles. I'm not going to sit there and read a book. I was waiting to the end of the game just so I could see what happens. Plus, it was too early I stay up late. It was too early. I couldn't go to bed yet. So I was just sitting there in the dark. I went outside, talked to the neighbors a little bit. Eventually, just went to bed. Woke up. Power was back. That's always a nice feeling. Now, the worst part, the most annoying part, is that I just went to the grocery store the other day. Power is out for 7 hours. I got to throw those the stuff in the fridge out, right? Fridge doesn't work for 7 hours. I Googled it. They said 4 hours is the limit. This was 7 hours overnight. That always stinks. Just stocked up the fridge this week. There it all goes, down the drain, because the power went out, and I have no idea why. I missed the Steelers' dramatic playoff victory years ago because some guy went crashing through our power lines, and I missed the walk-off homer for the Dodgers last night because I have no idea why. Lost power in the middle of the night. Coming up, an interesting trend in the NFL to keep an eye on this weekend. Plus, Jamar Brown had a big blunder for the Gamecocks. He spoke about it to the media this week. We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Interesting trend to keep an eye on in the NFL this weekend. Plus, we know about that really inexcusable blunder this past weekend for the Gamecocks from their defensive back, Jamar Brown, who dropped the ball at the goal line. It was actually included in Monday Night Countdown's Come On, Man, and rightfully so. Well, Brown spoke with the media yesterday. We'll get to that clip in just a little bit. The Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. They've been in business for over 100 years, and they're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S. They provide residential and commercial roofing, and in 1915, Baker Roofing Company was founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. You can check out their incredible history and see all the different roofing types that are available online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. I just looked up the game, by the way. The Jaguars won on the last second field goal. All these years, I thought it was the Steelers. But it was because I couldn't see the end of the game. Some hooligan went crashing into the power line across the street, knocked it out. And the end of the story, by the way, is that nothing happened with him because he was going to be deployed in about a week or two. I guess that's a fair trade-off. Just don't drink and drive. I'm thinking this whole time, I've been sitting here thinking that the Cardinals are going on to play the Giants because I couldn't see the game last night. I was told actually the Dodgers won, and I heard it was a big finish. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go to the phone. Sam is with us. Sam, what's going on? How are you?
You're doing good. How are you doing? Hope you're staying safe.
I am. Thank you. You as well.
Hey, I heard your comments on Steelers. I just let you know that I'm a diehard Steelers fan, and I've never been to Pittsburgh when I was a kid since 01.
Yeah?
Couple thoughts to talk about with you.
Yeah.
I was at the TD Arena today.
Uh-huh.
And my mind told me that I do believe that concession stands might be open to the public when they touch on. And number two is, what do you think about the block party for the CFC students? Because I sense, you know, we don't have it last year because of the pandemic going on.
Yeah.
What is the safety precautions for the block party? And number three is, what do you think about Ben Roethlisberger's future? Is he going to retire, or do you think about that?
Sam, I think you could do a better job right now than Ben Roethlisberger throwing the football. You could probably throw just as far as Ben Roethlisberger these days. I hope they're able to have the block party. I hope the concession stands are open. I know practice has gotten underway for college basketball, including the College of Charleston, and I think they have a really good year. They start November 11th, just over a month from now, against South Carolina State. But in regards to Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers, we've been talking about it a little bit here over the past week or two. Roethlisberger's fried at this point. And he just doesn't want the football in his hands. I don't know if it's an arm strength thing, or I think it's more so a fear of getting hit and playing behind a poor offensive line, probably for far too long, but especially here the last year and a half. Countless times, a 3rd and 10, even a 4th and long, and he's dumping it off to the running back yards ahead of the first down marker, not giving his team a chance. That, to me, that's the most frustrating thing. And I know, look, we can't see the all 22. Maybe there's nobody open downfield, yada, yada. But sometimes you got to take a chance. And that was always, for me, as a fan at home, that's the most annoying thing for me from a quarterback. Either holding the football too long or not giving their team a chance by constantly throwing short of the first down marker. And I'm talking well short. If you hit a receiver a yard before the first down marker on 4th down and he doesn't get it, okay, that's one thing. But, you know, Kirk Cousins has that reputation as well, and so I watch that every week. 3rd and 8, and he's dumping it off to the running back, and the running back's now going to have to run 10 yards after the catch. It's like, come on, give your guys a chance. Throw it downfield a little bit. Roethlisberger, he's just getting rid of the football. In fact, I don't think anybody is releasing the football quicker than Roethlisberger, and a lot of times the pressure isn't there. He's either feeling pressure that isn't there, he just doesn't want the football, or sometimes you just have to guess. As you get older like that and your natural ability isn't quite the same, you have to kind of guess to catch the defense off guard, and then maybe even mentally. Your mental ability is not quite the same either, and you're not guessing right either. But I was wrong on the Steelers. Now, I don't think I picked them to make the playoffs. I said they'd be around 500, but I did think Roethlisberger would be better. I thought the team would be a lot more competitive. They have statistically the worst offense in the league over the last 2 years. And I don't think it's going to get better. That defense is still good. They have a good coach. They'll win some games they shouldn't this year. You know, they'll hang around. But it is clear as day, Roethlisberger's number, his days are numbered. In fact, he's probably playing on borrowed time. They'll have a new quarterback next year. And Sam, it probably could be you. You'd probably be able to do a better job than Roethlisberger on some of those 3rd downs right now. Jamar Brown had the big blunder for the Gamecocks. He dropped the ball at the goal line. Joe, can you grab this audio? Brown spoke with the media yesterday. He's he's only a sophomore. I think he's a redshirt sophomore, so 3 years there at the program. Dropped the ball going in for the touchdown. We talked about it on the show Monday, and I said, you know, this Gamecocks team, a lot of penalties, a mistake like that. Shane Beamer, year one, you're your toughest on your kids when they're younger, and then once they become more like adults, you can become more like a friend of your kid. But early on, you got to set the tone. Year one for Shane Beamer, you got to set the tone. The Gamecocks are the 16th most penalized team in the country. They had that big mistake on Saturday, which is really inexcusable for Brown. But here's what he had to say, talking to the media yesterday about that big play.
Once again, just learn from it. I'm glad. I hate to say it. I'm glad to be a reference point, but I'm glad that I could be a reference point for other people to run the ball through the end zone. It's unfortunate that happened. It's unfortunate I made that mistake, and that mistake could have cost my team, and I felt very terrible about that. But at this point in time, there's nothing else for me to do but to move on. There's nothing else for my team to do but to move on. I apologize to Coach Beamer, and we're just going to take every step to move on from there.
Good message from the young kid Brown, but you have to know better just in that situation. What did he say at the beginning of that clip? Like that he can be the example moving forward? There have been examples. There shouldn't even have to be an example. Hey, make sure you hold on to that football until you cross the goal line. And as I compared it on Monday to the scene from Swingers, right, don't be the PG-13 guy. Be the rated R guy if you're a coach with a new program. 16th most penalties in the country in a play like that. Those are the things that are going to keep you from getting where you want to go. Those will keep you from winning those close, tight games that you need. But at least Brown, right, good response, stood up there in front of the media, took accountability, and that's what you want to hear afterwards as well. You just don't want to see a play like that. Coming up, it is a Throwback Thursday. Today's the anniversary of the biggest beatdown in sports history. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
I'm doing great, but I'm hoping you could call me Boca Baby.
Great show. You're doing a good job.
Hey, you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always getting these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear. We like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays, where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da-da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Well, it's been looped for 3 hours. Anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Up on a tight wire, one side's ice and one is fire. It's a circus game with you and me. I'm up on a tight rope, one side's hate and one is hope. But the top hat on my head.
Wrapping up hour one here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. It's a Throwback Thursday, and it's the anniversary of the biggest beatdown we've ever had in sports history. We'll talk some Braves baseball coming up in about 10 minutes, top of next hour with Corey McCartney as we start to look ahead to the Braves Brewers. Tomorrow's a football Friday, so today we'll break down that Braves Brewers series, which begins tomorrow night. And I'll let you know the keys to the series as well coming up next hour. We'll catch up with Paul Charchian next hour as well. Lee Sterling just over an hour from now for his picks of the football weekend. Today is the 105th anniversary of the biggest sports beatdown we've ever had. Georgia Tech beat Cumberland on this day, 1916. They beat them 222-0. This game is absurd. I'm also equally as impressed that we have stats from this game in 1916. But I can tell you that Cumberland had minus 42 rushing yards. They did try to throw it 18 times, completing only two passes. That was probably a big deal in 1916. And on those 18 pass attempts, six were interceptions. Cumberland had 15 turnovers in the game. Meanwhile, Georgia Tech never threw the ball, but they did run it for 978 yards. Almost 1,000 rushing yards. They also had 32 rushing touchdowns and won 222-0 against Cumberland. And Vic Fangio was upset this past weekend that Harbaugh ran the ball when they were up 16 at the end of the game to help break a record. What was Cumberland thinking? 105 years ago, Georgia Tech was up over 100 points, and they're still running the football and scoring touchdowns. At what point do you say, all right, enough is enough. Let's just kneel it. Let's run in the other direction. Let's punt on first down. You're up 222-0. Poor Cumberland. Happened on this day 105 years ago. That has to be the worst sports beatdown we have ever had. 222 to nothing in 1916. We'll get ready for Braves Brewers. Corey McCartney will join us when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.